welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today, we're glad to be joined again with Nicole Parra. Nicole, how's it going? And thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be back on your show.
I know. A lot has happened since we last talked. You know, you're running for Congress. Now you're running for Senate. Kind of talk to us about that process, about kind of, you know, coming in and looking to run again and, you know, finally settling on the state Senate.
Yes. You know, as I, you know, last time I spoke with you, it really redistricting really changed a lot for so many people, right? You have some, you know, incumbents running against incumbents. But for me personally, having the Senate district, Senate seat 16 open up and to see, you know, and to get encouragement from folks from Kern and Kings and Tulare County to run. It's my former assembly seat. It does include a couple new communities like Porterville. And it was after talking to my family and friends and also reaching out, you know, that last week of December to Senator Hurtado and getting pretty much her blessing. She was running up north in Senate District 14. I put together a great campaign, a number of endorsements. And December 29th, I announced my intention to run for the state Senate seat. And it's been wonderful. I've been, you know, campaigning and securing wonderful endorsements, you know, from, you know, local communities. I have about 100 bipartisan endorsements from most of the local folks. And then the statewide, I received the endorsement of CORAC last week. So that's the police officers. And I have a couple big announcements next week. So it's been wonderful. And, you know, folks really look at my record. I have 30 years of experience in public service here. I was born and raised. I went to public schools here in Kern County. I've lived in all four counties. And, you know, it's unfortunate that Hurtado has chosen to move to Bakersfield. You know, but she has Sacramento support and I've got the local support and we'll see what happens on June 7th.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Is it seems like redistricting, we all knew what was happening. You know, as you said, you've been around 30 years, like we all knew what happened every 10 years. But did it, I guess, catch a lot of us by surprise about how the lines were drawn?
Yeah, you know, the redistricting commission was, you know, 10 years ago was their first round. And yes, it was, I think the public was very well organized, different groups going to meetings. And despite the fact that it was mostly online because of COVID, I think you saw a lot of voter and community participation. And some of those, you know, they looked at their factors and made the decision. It didn't depend on where incumbents lived or did not live. And I'm very happy personally how it turned out, especially in SD 16, and look forward to representing this district in the state Senate.
So that's funny. So, you know, you're originally running for Congress, then you know, you decided to run for state Senate, that new District 16 that was drawn. And at that time, no one had declared to run for District 16. As you said, kind of Hurtado gave you her blessing. Right. And then kind of what happened? I guess Hurtado was in a district with another senator, huh? And they kind of overlapped. Is that what happened?
Yes. So Anna Caballero was in SD 14 and Hurtado was redistricted out. She's from Sanger. So So she had told me win or lose, she was going to stay and run in SD 14. And so again, on 7 weeks later, after I declared December 29th on President's Day, she called and said, you know, but a lot of folks were, look, there was, you know, bad. Look, first of all, I served with Anna Caballero. She's amazing. Oh, a community leader, advocate, and she would be, you know, she was polling, you know, above Hurtado. She had received the California Democrats' endorsement. You know, even in Hurtado's Sanger City Council seat, 4 out of the 5 city council members endorsed Anna Caballero, number of local leaders. So for her, it was going to be an uphill challenge. But, you know, I would have respected her, to be honest, a lot more if she was fighting for Sanger. It would be like if I moved from Bakersfield to Sanger to run for the state Senate seat. And folks say, well, she represented this area. Well, less than 4 years she did. And really the last 2 years when she, you know, basically, you know, we didn't see her much around here in Kirk County during COVID. You can talk to a few elected officials about that. So, you know, I don't buy into, well, she represented this area and now just because she moved in. No, the voters are going to decide June 7th who they want. And it's unfortunate, again, that she decided to leave her community, leave her hometown to stay in the Senate. And Sacramento is going to put the money behind her, endorsements behind her. But to be honest, you know, I'm running a grassroots campaign. And we're walking every day. And that's another thing, you know, not to see any campaigning by the incumbent. And when I meet with folks, you know, many of them said they couldn't even identify her if she walked into a room in the district. And, you know, what is she fighting to be reelected, or is she relying on, you know, I've challenged her to debate, you know, call me, let's debate the issues. I've heard nothing from her or her campaign. There's a couple of forums I will be participating in next month in Tulare. I really hope she participates, because it's about letting the voters hear both sides, our records, what we've done in the community, our volunteer work. And, you know, from Alpaw to Allensworth, Ivanhoe, Dinuba, Farmersville, Arvin, Lamont, you know, I've got over a dozen mayors, city council members, you know, and just look at my list. And what does that say to an incumbent when over 100 people are endorsing your opponent, which is me and not you?
Yeah, I guess that's really interesting. I guess having that kind of, you know, visibility and I guess experience in the district with your name ID, that's going to be a real advantage to you. Whereas, you know, of course, she's the incumbent, but
right.
She is unknown in many parts down
there. Oh, many people don't even know who she is when I tell them who I'm running against. They have no idea.
Wow. So yeah, it's a interesting situation here that you don't really see too often.
Right. Right.
And so I guess, so kind of what, when you're going door to door, kind of what are the voters caring about right now? What are you hearing a lot about?
Number one is public safety. Number two would be water. Number three, homelessness. And so when I, you know, I'm talking to the Corcoran Police Chief Ruben Shortnessy or Kings County Sheriff Abe Robinson, you know, they partner up with a lot of the mental health providers. And, you know, even in Visalia with Chief Salazar, you know, working, I did a ride along. We were able to see the HOPE team that works with, it's actually a part of law enforcement for assigned officers who work with the mental health providers. And when there are interactions with the homeless population, those who need help, they are writing and they try to get resources immediately to the person in need. And in Kings County, they're trying to do the same thing, but the statistics are very startling. When Chief Shortnessy and Corcoran told me in the last year, there's been about a 22.5% increase in contact law enforcement has with the homeless population. And out of that, there has been some violent interactions. And two of his officers were out the last year because of confrontations with some of the folks who are on drugs and who become violent. And, you know, we want to make sure that our law enforcement community officers, men and women, in addition to working with social services, the homeless collaboratives and mental health, are able to provide services and wrap around. But the problem is, as the sheriff clearly indicated to me, was that after 5 and on the weekends, you know, they don't have the help that they need. And so they end up having, the sheriff said, I'm end up on the phone trying to find beds, trying to find a place. I also toured the Hanford, the county jail for Kings County, and it's become a mental ward. You go in down the hallways and you're seeing folks who, you know, they don't have any place to go. They have been violent to others or themselves. And we need to continue. I know there's legislation. I know there was a hearing today with the governor's proposal to be able to, you know, put those who are harmed to themselves, who may not give approval to be, you know, put in care. And so it'd be interesting to see how that vote is made today. But yeah, when I'm walking door to door, I'll tell you, property crimes have increased. Cadillac converter, theft. Back in the day when I was in the assembly, it was copper wire. You're seeing people break-ins, burglaries, and you know, and also violent crimes. I drove around with Officer Padma from the Corcoran PD, and you should see the number of drive-bys every night. There's that aren't reported, but you can drive around the neighborhoods and see the bullet holes in the houses, the front of the house, the cars parked in front for protection. And, you know, it makes it also difficult for the officers who are trying to interview a lot of the folks who are under 18, and they're no longer able to question them in the heat of a crime or an investigation. And so we're really seeing and hearing from our law enforcement community, they need help, they need resources. And the community is responding by, you know, what's going on with our crime and the response. And then I spent time, you know, with the dispatchers. And let me tell you, from, you know, from McFarland, I was in with the dispatch to Visalia, Hanford, and Corcoran. We need to help the first responders and in what they're dealing with, and giving them the resources they need to be able to respond. You know, folks think just like when they turn on the faucet, they're going to have clean water. When you pick up the phone and dial 911, that you'll have services for you. And that's the role of government, right? That's the role that we should provide, right? Resources for people. And we're failing, and we need to do more. And that's what I want to do the next 8 years, is leverage my knowledge, my resources, and my relationships to get things done, and really listen to folks and say, what do you need? And that's what I plan to do.
Yeah, you know, we're hearing a lot about crime and that being, you know, on the voters' minds these days, and kind of hearing a lot from law enforcement saying they don't really feel that they, I guess, have the tools necessary to, I guess, combat that crime, that a lot of these crimes aren't worth their time in responding to in regards to theft and things like that. Kind of what are the things that you're thinking of that you can do to help kind of address some of these crime issues?
Well, one thing, when I was yesterday, I met with the police chief Williams out of McFarland. He took me on a tour of the police station there. And before, they used to contract with the county, and they had deputy sheriffs, they had about 3 or 4. Now they've got about 24 people working out of I think it was less than 1,500 square feet. The property room, the cars, the police cars are 20 years old. So one of the things that I want to work with our law enforcement community is just the infrastructure, some of the needs that they need to be able to do the job. And so you really can start looking at federal and state grants in a better way. We have a lot of, you know, we're hearing from a lot of elected officials, there's 20 million here, they're doing 50 million checks out here. But we really need to, in especially in rural communities, come together and leverage our resources to target especially the rural police stations. And so that's number one, is be able to target resources. Number two, I want to set up and work with like the HIDA, high intensity drug trafficking areas that we have. I want to talk to the police chiefs and sheriffs and see what kind of task force do we need? Are we working in the right way? Are we being efficient with human trafficking, with some of the drug, you know, we're seeing an increase in fentanyl and other drugs. So we really need, so in that area, what is some of the resources that we need there? And then I would like to look at on recruitment and retention. You know, many of the, you know, in the rural communities, we need to do a better job at helping them with the Explore program, really recruiting some of the folks who are interested in being in public service, recruiting them from the community so they serve and they live in the communities. And so those are the things that I want to talk to and work with. And that's why I've been supported by local law enforcement, Sheriff Robinson, Chief Shortnessy, and the local folks, the deputy sheriffs in Kings County, is because of my understanding of the issues, my ability to be accessible and to be able to work at the state and federal level. When I was working for Congressman Dooley, did a lot of work and, you know, providing information about good grants for the law enforcement community. But it goes hand in hand with the community. We need to ensure, like, get the PAL programs going, right? For after school programs, get the community and the relationships with law enforcement and our families, increase the trust, right? Trusted advisors. And so those are the issues I want to work on. In addition to, as I mentioned before, water, infrastructure, conveyance, storage, things that I worked on in the legislature, career technical education. I want to help with our care providers in healthcare, our teachers. And so there's a whole host of issues that I want to continue working on, in addition to legislative oversight. When I was on the chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, we did a lot of good work looking at how efficiently we're spending our taxpayer dollars. And then I want to pick up a couple select committees and looking at our veterans and our bases at Lemoore Naval Air Station, ensuring that they have the resources they need for the next, you know, 50, 60 years.
Yeah. You know, an interesting thing you touched on is the second most important thing in the Valley is water. And mm-hmm. you know, I just love driving through the Valley because you see these great signs about water and kind of their thoughts about water and dams and all that stuff. And, you know, water should be one of the most, you know, easy, essential things you could provide to constituents, right? Like everyone should have clean, drinkable water, but that's not really the case in your district. Can you kind of talk to us about the state of water in your district and, you know, why can't we get you guys clean, safe water? And, you know, what are the solutions to making that happen?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So Alpaugh, let's use Alpaugh's example. In 2003, when I was in the state assembly, you had a town that had two wells, one for agriculture and the community, and both wells went down. And it's a town of about 800 people, let's say on the 43, about 10 miles west, you know, and so it's a real rural community near Allensworth. And, you know, they were without before I got there. They had been without clean drinking water for the school kids and for the families. So we went in and you asked the question, why, what's going on? And a lot of these communities, they don't have the technical folks to be able to write these grants and to be able to go to Sacramento. So if you have elected officials who aren't necessarily entrenched in the rural communities, they're really left on their own. And that's still happening today. And that's another reason why, you know, I mean, I've been out to Alpaugh probably about four times just in the last 2 months. Sandra Moraz, who was the community leader, who were able to get a 5,000 gallon water tank for 9 months out in Alpaugh in 2003. I went back to see her in January and no elected official had come back to Alpaugh since I had left. And so I met with the community. I attended the community service district meeting. And so with her a couple of weeks ago with Sandra. So let me tell you, so now, as everyone knows, with the sustainable, the Sigma, the groundwater in the Central Valley, we're taking an inventory and it's mandated that a lot of the communities form these GSAs and they're able to look at what groundwater, where should we make investments and so forth. So actually we heard a great presentation by the Department of Conservation 2 weeks ago, and they're looking at, there's a $50 million grant in the state budget. We'll know in May 15th, the May revise, if that governor's request is going to be sustained. And so with that money, they're hoping to start working on these plans in these rural communities. So one of the things that I was talking to the gentleman about was recharge basins near wells to be able to assist and provide when there's rain and other, you know, surface water that they can then put them in these basins and then they can help and assist if a water well goes down and near in a rural community. So that's number one. I mean, that's still happening. I was talking to former supervisor Steve Worthy and last week in Cutler Rossi and you know, he was talking about, you know, the antiquated infrastructure, the pipelines, the wells and so forth. You know, I was up in Fresno. This is a good one. Talking to Will Scott with the Black Farmers with the Nisi Farmers League. And, you know, when they're looking at the effects of fallowing, you know, 50% of their farm, you know, that's it for them, for our small farmers. You know, the bigger farms may be able to compensate for that loss, but these small farmers, and there are Nisi farmers, Black farmers, rural farmers that are very small. And so they rely on surface storage. They don't have $250,000 to build and, you know, to dig a new well. And then under Sigma, you can't just go out and dig a new well or replace parts because you have to go through three or four steps. So that's just basically the rural. Now we're talking conveyance, you know, what's going on and to get re-engaged in the issues regarding the Delta. Right. I can even tell you, I've been working on water policy when I was a staffer for Congressman Dooley for 25 years, and I don't see any movement regarding the Delta and transferring water that is, you know, 5%, 0% allocation from the CVP. That's just Central Valley Project and the feds that we can't exist any longer. And then what you're talking about with no water is no jobs. And you're talking about food insecurity here in the Central Valley. And so we need to really come together and prioritize. I also want to look at Proposition 1 that was passed in 2014. Where are we? What funds have been allocated? Who's making these decisions? And I wouldn't mind having a conversation with the state auditor when I'm elected to look at how the money's been spent. We looked at an audit through the through Senator Bradford with the Air Resources Board on transportation fuels. I would be interested in looking at an audit on our water policies and our propositions. Why not? So those are the things that I'm looking at on the legislative oversight. In addition to meeting with stakeholders who've been engaged, like Mario Santoya with the Latino Water Coalition and other folks who've been engaged in this since I left office.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, we've had these years and years of budget surpluses, which you're probably not used to, right? Because when you were in the assembly, there was deficits.
Yes.
So what are, like, you think with $60, $70, $80 billion, who knows how much we have now, that you could do something really meaningful, like ensure water resources for the whole state? Kind of. What are your thoughts on that? Like, is it a lack of funding? You know, what kind of big ideas, kind of big problems could we solve with such great budget surpluses?
Well, number one, I mean, and so that's what, so I don't understand it. And again, you know, we have good elected officials in the Central Valley, but I don't understand why they're not all working together to target regarding, you know, law enforcement budget requests. And so it seems like, you know, I never worked in a budget surplus, that members specifically, I get the Democrats are getting, you know, $50 to $100 million for projects that they identify in their districts. And that's great. I mean, being able to build an after school building, being able to do this. But what I would be interested in doing is working across with Republicans and Democrats and identifying the three biggest infrastructure needs, right? And really, you know, so for instance, look at, you know, where are we on any inland port ideas, right? I know the COGS are looking at, and they're going through different analysis on an inland port. What are we doing? If you can combine cleaner air, getting some of the trucks off the 99, extending some of the Highway 99 that was promised to us, looking at then the supply side issue for exporting our ag products and being able to clear some of the port traffic on the supply side. So, you know what I mean? So yeah. Investing in something that pays dividends on air quality, transportation, quality of life, because spending 3 hours on the 99, or, you know, right. is not good for your mental health or physical yeah. health. And I know that I'm on it every night, right. every day now. So that would be one. And then I would say, okay, members, let's all ask and let's work together to see if we could get $250 million to be able to do this, right? That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then let's look at mental health with our law enforcement community, and then the resources getting higher, good, better technology for what they need, right? And maybe some resources for recruitment and retention. And then, you know, on the water infrastructure, instead of doing these things, just, you know, who needs money for reelection, who's the loudest, who's partnering here, and really looking at the area of a whole. And that was the intention when we created the San Joaquin Valley Partnership. I mean, where's the $10 million that would help benefit the eight counties to be able to take some of the best practices from the counties and implement them? I mean, that's what that was for. And it's unfortunate. I haven't even heard the partnership talked about much from the elected officials today. And then unfortunately, you know, we have folks, you know, Rudy Salas, you know, running for office. He'll either win Congress or not, but he's out of the assembly. And then I beat Hurtado, so I'm in. And then what happens to Adam Gray, another wonderful advocate for the Valley? So we really have our work cut out. And that's why people, again, coming full circle, are supporting me, because I can actually have these conversations about work we did 20, 10, 5 years ago, and the ability to have a record of leveraging resources and people and getting things done. You know, whether it was, you know, my work as the chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee or the Base Realignment and Closure Act to ensure we had the F-18s at Lemoore, working, you know, collaboratively with Republicans and Democrats to get things done. And we had to. We weren't a supermajority like we are now, where it's one party rule and very few moderate Democrats are problem solvers. And so I understand that, you know, I'm not going to go up there and be able to do everything I want to do, but better believe I'm going to dig just like I am on this campaign. I'm going to work tirelessly for the next 8 years to get things done.
You know, it's an interesting thing with term limits, right? Everyone thought, oh, these longer term limits of 12 years will enable, I guess, things to happen as legislators learn the process, get substantive and kind of learn things, right? And I guess right. that's the one great thing you bring here is your experience. Can you kind of tell us about how valuable your experience is of having already been here to, you know, actually solving some of these bigger issues?
Right. You know, one of the experiences, and, you know, I was 32 when I ran for the assembly. I'm 52 now. And so with that, and have more experience than just being, you know, a staffer or an elected official, I was in the private sector for 5 years working on energy policy. I was an adjunct professor for 2 years teaching at Cal State University Bakersfield. I ran a $500 million school bond, Measure J, for Porterville College and Bakersfield College. I had my own business, NMP Consulting. And I got to even be an assistant baseball coach down wow. here in Kern County with my dad and brother. So, I mean, you know, that brings not only just more life experience, right? Number two is that, yes, I was in the assembly for 6 years, and on the political side, think about it. I had Kevin McCarthy, who was the Republican leader at the time, and Dean Flores, who was in the Senate. I had both of them every election and reelect trying to take me out. And the beauty of that, it made me such a stronger, I believe, candidate and then also elected official, because I was, always reading more, extra prepared, just in case, the preparation. And I worked very hard to be able to chair big committees, from Veterans, Joint Legislative Audit, and Agriculture. So with that experience, and then it was like, we had the E. coli outbreak. I issued the subpoena when Kevin Shelley resigned because of the HAVA funds, right? When, the federal government, and we were trying to figure out what was going on at the Secretary of State. Folks are saying, well, he's not appearing in front of your committee. So yes, I issued a subpoena and he resigns the next day. I also had the overview of the Bay Bridge, working, with state agencies, the veterans and Barstow, the skilled nursing facility. The ratio wasn't helping our veterans. I literally oversaw the move from Barstow to Yountville of our veterans. So I've had, in that 6 years, it was like 20 years, and I was, a lot younger. And so using that experience, being able to get into the state Senate and working with folks I served with in the assembly, Anna Caballero, Senator John Laird, a lot of the folks that I served with before, to be able to understand, I'm not going so I can introduce 20 bills a year. I'm going to introduce the bills that are needed, but really working with state agencies, working with organizations like CFE, California Foundation for the Economy and the Environment, really digging into what's the best practices in the world, in the country, in the state. And also one thing I'm going to do is the people on my endorsement list, that's my kitchen cabinet. I will never forget those folks who are with me right now when, the Sacramento folks are saying, that Hurtado's a person, they cut my funding, they took my fundraiser, my consultant's gone, my treasurer. And, so the folks who are with me now, I'll tell you, they're going to be in my office. They're going to be the ones I ask for help. They're the ones that I'm going to say, what do you think? So if anyone thinks that, me going up there and following in line with Sacramento doesn't know me, I'm stronger, I'm smarter, and I'm coming with an army, and we're coming to Sacramento. I'll tell you that in November.
And it's funny, because that kind of attitude plays to the district, right? Can you kind of tell us about your district and kind of how it's split up and kind of R&D and kind of outlook on that?
Yeah, the SD16, it's made up of, it's about, 40 something percent Democrat, 23% Republican, and 20 something percent NPP. But I'll tell you what, I mean, you go to houses and you've got a Republican woman and a Democrat married together, and they are, one will just register too, so they can get information on both candidates, right? So and people, they don't care. The majority and the folks who've joined me, it's not about the party and it's not politics. It's just about getting the job done. Right. And so I've been a firecracker since I was 14 years old, walking for school bonds in Lamont. My mentors were Congressman Cal Dooley, who formed the New Democrat Coalition because he was tired of the partisan politics. My dad was a Democrat on a board of supervisors where he was a lone Democrat, but worked so well with the Republicans, was able to get resources for his district, East Bakersfield, Lamont, and Arvin. And when I came, I was the chair of the New Dems and really crossed party lines and worked. And that's the folks down here in the Valley. I mean, you can walk in Corcoran and meet with Latino families and they're Republican and they just want to support someone who gets things done. You can then go, and it's so different each county. Fresno, a little bit more progressive. Kings County, voters more conservative. Tulare, much more conservative. And Kern is kind of in that kind of purple state, right? But it takes someone that has lived there, has talking to them, has grown up. I have family members that you take away their guns, they won't vote for anyone who won't protect the right to own a firearm. Then I have family members who were 100% behind Bernie Sanders, right? So even our own families, we are very politically diverse. But one thing, again, about the Central Valley is when you try to tell people that this is the person to vote for because they said so, because she's a sitting member, and that's backfiring big time. They want the ability. And if she is that person, where is she? Where is she? I think someone told me she's been in the district four times since January, been in this part, one to file and three quick events. And so, you know, I want to debate her. I want to talk to her and let's do a debate. You know, call me, let's talk about the issues. And it's not going to be personal. I mean, she's the one that took the first swipe by doing this weird negative website on me, right? And so it's like, okay. And, you know, I'm trying to keep this positive on the issues, but I'll tell you, if you poke me, my supporters are going to come after you. If you keep poking me and trying to say that, you know, negative things about me and attack me personally, you know, watch out, because I will with my supporters fire back.
So I guess, how do you see, like, I guess fast forwarding to June, I guess, how do you see this playing out? Do you think it's going to be Dem on Dem?
No, I see this playing out and I talk to people. So if you just look at the map, it'll be high propensity Dems, high propensity Republicans. And so there's only one Republican. So he'll get through. The numbers just show he'll get through. I'll come in second place. And then Hurtado and Osorio and the other folks will trail behind. So it will be Dave Shepard and myself, 1 and 2. And then I beat him 2-1 in November.
Okay, wow. So I guess there's three Democrats then running and one Republican.
Yeah, let's see. Yes. Well, no. Myself, Hurtado, Osorio, yes, and a Reverend. So four. And then one Republican. So no, it will be a R&D. And then nice guy, 30 years old. But again, I'll have the ability to bring more Republicans and Democrats together. I'll be the Democrat and being able to have the resources I need to continue and be successful through November.
Interesting. You know, kind of as you touched on before, like, you know, you have the experience, you've been in the assembly. I guess you've seen how it was before COVID. Kind of what are some fond memories of how, you know, being a member in the old days used to be?
Oh, you know what? It was the best. I mean, we really had, you know, we had the big five leadership. And I think this is what these folks miss now. I mean, don't experience where you had discussions between Republicans and Democrats. Remember, we had, you know, Fabian Nunez, and then you had Kevin McCarthy, and then Senator Dick Ackerman, and was it Daryl Steinberg on the Dem side? And, you know, they were the leaders with the governor. And you had amazing, great senior staff coming into caucuses. We started the Cordial Caucus. I started it with Cindy Montanez, Mary Gonzalez Kenny, Tony Strickland, and Kevin, where we would bring in members and staff together to be able to socialize, to be able to get to know each other. We did a lot of, because we didn't have surpluses, we were very efficient. And at that time that I worked under three speakers. I came in with Herb Wesson, then Fabian Nunez, and then Karen Bass. And, you know, it was, we ran fast because of term limits, 6 years. But I'll tell you, the we were able to work across party lines. We were able to, you know, it's not this weird thing that a Republican gets a bill if they vote for the budget. It was more organic. It was more real. It was more raw. And the relationships, some of those folks are still my best friends today on both sides of the aisle. And the memories and you know, It was such a good time, but we worked hard, I'll tell you. And again, we were, many of us were very young, you know, all in kind of our 30s. And we kind of grew up learning on the job. And then we all went out and did different things. My staff, they're amazing. They're in running CTA. And I love to see, Cynthia Leon with the paper, international paper, and Matt Rogers and Matt Bunch and a Kings County supervisor, Richard Valley. My staff they were great, and they're on to bigger and better things, and they're all helping me now.
No, that's great. It's so awesome to see how time goes on where people are.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, one thing you didn't mention when we were talking to voters that he was a hot ticket item a couple weeks ago or a month ago was gas prices, energy prices. It's something, you know, you're familiar with. The governor proposing giving, you know, people $400 a car. You know, they're trying to decide on what to do with this extra money, how to help people at the pump. Is that something you're seeing of concern, you know, right now in the Valley, of people, you know, concerned about rising gas prices and energy prices? And And if so, kind of how do you think the best solution to deal with that is?
Yeah. And so, yes, it's definitely a concern. I mean, I started this campaign and budgeted for gas just on my campaign, you know, with me personally. And I'm literally at the gas station. I think, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, dating the attendant inside, you know, it's like I'm there 3 days a week filling up, you know, and that's really taken a lot. It's just even me personally. And I know, and I hear from people, I mean, deciding between filling up their tank or going to, you know, to Costco or being able to get to their job. We don't have mass transit here. We don't have the ability to jump on BART or, you know, for the, you know, workers who are in construction trades and, you know, our gardeners and our working people to put their tools in their boxes. You know, they're not going to be, you know, there's not all these little electric cars running around, you know? And so, you know, it is making an impact on families and businesses economically, you know, police. I mean, they've seen their gas, you know, bills, you know, quadruple. That's impacting the ability for them to allocate resources properly. But, you know, when you do find, you know, and I talked to a lot of gas station owners and, you know, many of them made the commitment that they're keeping prices. I was just in Lemoore at a Fast Trip and the owner there is like, I'm keeping them below, you know, $5. It was $4.77 and the lines were, you know, half a block. I filled up and I'm like, I'm going to drive to Lemoore. And I heard that Tachi was even lower in Costco. So people are being smarter about where they're filling up and so forth. But the bigger question, I think what you're asking is, you know, when I talk to people about, you know, California, right? We're an island, you know, based on regulations and executive orders. We can't rail in crude oil, crude or bring it in by pipeline. So what does that mean? Because of, you know, the inability of us to produce our own transportation fuels, we are only, you know, producing 30% of the demand, which is here, most of it in Kern County. So what does that mean? We're importing 70% and we're importing from countries that don't have the policies that that our oil companies adhere to. 28 agencies oversee the oil industry. Air Resources Board has the most stringent policies. And so when we're looking at importing 70%, and you know, and then you see companies like, you know, Marathon Petroleum and P66 and Valero and Chevron all trying to, they're investing billions of dollars into hydrogen, renewable diesel. And, you know, down here locally in Kern County, California Resources, CRC and ERA, you know, they're trying to invest in carbon sequestration. So we're trying, when I talk to people, I said, you know, and I'd say 99% agree. We need to be supporting an all the above energy policy. Our electric grid, we can talk about that on another show, is so fragile. We can't even sustain a wildfires, right? The public safety shutoffs, we can't even keep, you know, I was talking to some truckers and they're like, look, if we have to electrify, you know, get 15% of our fleet electrified, we'd suck up all electricity California uses in one day, which is 15% of the trucks. I was talking to the Hanford Director of Regional Transportation. She goes, Nicole, I have to buy these electric buses. I love my renewable natural gas. And what am I going to do with the batteries in 8 years? And these buses are $1 million each. And we're really trying to be accessible to, you know, do regional transportation where people from Alvinall can go to Hanford for dialysis and so forth. So by picking and choosing technologies, by limiting our ability to produce our energy and capture carbon here, that's why we're where we're at. So it's a complicated. It's not these oil companies trying to make money or these franchisees trying to bleed, you know, working families. We got to look straight up to Sacramento and say, this is what's happening here. By picking and choosing the technology, by limiting the ability to produce our fuels from here, by making it so challenging to get permits to capture our carbon, this is where we are. Right. When the grid is down and we need electrons, who are the folks that they call? Us, you know, the folks that I used to work for, the oil and energy companies to help. They call the people who are running the natural gas, people who are running the peaker plants, you know, it's like, okay, we understand that there's some in the community and state that want fossil fuels gone, but they still have a responsibility to provide transportation fuels to our first responders, our 29 million passenger vehicles. And again, I always say this, I haven't seen an electric plane and I don't think I'm going to see one for the next 10, 20 years. But what we do have are fuels that are cleaner, like renewable diesel. and we are able to keep good jobs. Converting the Martinez, renewable diesel facility from 100% crude saved, a million labor hours by men and women who are in the trades, making good money, middle class, six figures in these jobs. And so you can't tell me we're going to, eliminate fossil fuels in the next 10 years and then put everyone in renewable energy fields. And what are those jobs? I still haven't seen the high road blueprint that the governor keeps talking about and identified any of these jobs. I know we're trying to do it in Kern County through Bakersfield College and Cal State Bakersfield with some of the grants the governor's giving, but I'm not yet sold on where are these jobs? How are they going to still pay the income that are second chances for a lot of the workers, whether they're coming formerly incarcerated or are trying to get, just graduated from high school? Where are these jobs that they keep talking about to replace some of these good energy jobs that we have now?
Yeah. But that's the thing, all this stuff is so convoluted. And I think that's where your experience and your time here is going to be well served for your constituents.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. And that's why people, after I start, I know I could talk, but after I'm talking to folks at a round table, they're like, sign us up. What do we need to do to get you in? Cause it's when you're older and you've been through it, you've written and you've worked and you've wrote language, you've authored bills, you've been around. I feel very comfortable. I don't need notes. There's no one giving me talking points here. I can talk to any reporter, any person. The two kids I was walking with, Sunday in Delano, Jesus and Will, they were asking a lot of questions about their community. And, I love that. I love talking about issues and helping to solve them.
Well, keep walking and keep knocking, Nicole. And we wish you the best of luck and hopefully talk to you again in June.
Yes. All right.
Thanks a lot, Nicole.
All right. Bye-bye.